right, welcome to the Young Turks. Another huge news day today, obviously because of what happened in Barcelona and the continuing fallout of what happened in Virginia. There's more Nazis here in America making asses of themselves. We do have videos on that. And Donald Trump and Steve Bannon also making asses of themselves with amazing stories of why, what they actually think those are, were going to be the lead stories, and they are, I don't want you to miss them. They're later in this hour, okay? But obviously, tragedy in Barcelona is first. So let's discuss that. Yet another day, yet another terrorist attack, and this time it's in Barcelona. Same MO as has happened before, and now here in America, unfortunately, as well, where the terrorist used a vehicle to run people over. In this Barcelona attack, 13 people killed and over 100 injured. It just happened today, so there'll be far more details as the story unfolds. There's a news of a Moroccan man who is identified as having rented the van that did the damage, but there's also stories that he turned himself in when he saw himself on local news. So we'll update you on all that as soon as we have the information, but that's breaking as we speak right now, live on the air. So I'm gonna show you a video, guys, because it's super hard to look at, and I get it if you don't want to look at it, because you're going to see the people in the streets, etc. This is like what happened in Charlottesville in a lot of ways. It's gruesome to look at, but we got to realize what's happening here, and we don't have an enviable job here as we show you the raw, ugly truth as to the damage that's done. But whether it's drone strikes or Nazis or ISIS, you got to see it to understand how bad it is. So here's what happened in Barcelona. Oh man, that's enormously heartbreaking. So look, you don't have to know someone in Barcelona or anyone in these affected communities to have empathy, I hope. But you know, it's a natural human reaction to want to empathize with people. I hope, again, that's natural human reaction for you guys. So in my case, my parents were just in Barcelona. They were there about a month ago. Could have been them. And so it's heartbreaking. This round of violence goes round and round and round and round. And so I want to get to our best efforts at constructive solutions in a second. But let me tell you who people think are responsible. So of course, there's a question of whether it's a terrorist attack when you first hear about it. As you look at those pictures, it doesn't seem like much of a question. The authorities have said they think it is, but they're not yet sure who did it. The people who are sure is ISIS, because they claim responsibility. They say that, this is HuffPost, self-described Islamic State claimed responsibility for the violence via its Amaq news agency. Sometimes they claim responsibility, not necessarily so. Or they say, yeah, sure, it was us, which is already horrific enough, but didn't actually plan it. In this case, there's a good chance they did plan it, because they say the tragedy comes 2 weeks after a pro-ISIS Twitter user threatened an imminent attack in Spain and pledged to reconquer Andalusia. Of course, these guys are delusional. They're not reconquering Spain or Portugal or anything along those lines. That's absolute idiocy and madness. And the best they can do is just strike out here and do this kind of damage and hurt innocent people. They're not hurting the people who made the decisions, even if they thought, oh, the West is responsible for attacking us. Well, first of all, I mean, I don't want to go on even legitimizing their insane beliefs on how they're going to win and why they're aggrieved. I don't care. I know for a fact that those people that they just killed had nothing to do with it. So let me give you more context into what happened in Europe. Cars and truck attacks have killed over 100 people in separate incidents across Europe in recent years. Extremist groups have long advocated for their supporters to use vehicles to target pedestrians. And of course, here in America, now Nazis have apparently picked up that same MO as they ran over people in Charlottesville just within this week. So in terms of when I see something like this, I always think, how in the world can we solve it? Because it's unbearable to look at, unbearable to think about. So I know that others have very simplistic ideas. Oh, they attacked us, so we should attack them. Very obvious question, if you want to bother thinking about anything at all, is who is they? So I hear the right wing screaming already, it's the Muslims. Now, guys, no one's saying, for the attacks that we already know about, and very likely this one, no one's saying, no, the guy who did it is not Muslim. It's like, again, in Virginia, nobody's saying that the guy wasn't a Nazi. Yes, that guy's a Nazi. He also happened to be a right winger. That doesn't make all right wingers guilty. Now, if you went to that rally and you held torches, you knew where you were going with that. They did, but even in that story, even for those loathsome guys who chanted Sieg Heil and the Jews will not replace us, etc., I said they didn't all do the violence. Fields, the guy who's arrested for running over those people, did the violence, and he's to be held responsible. So there's the people who did the violence, there's the people who hold a radical fundamentalist ideology, and then there's the larger group. It would be insane to say that we should round up all the right wingers in America and hold them responsible for what happened in Virginia. Insane. So when some folks want to simplify things because their mind can't comprehend things that aren't incredibly simple, they go, okay, me blame all 1.6 billion Muslims. Okay, if you're in that camp, have at it, Hoss. Scream till you're hoarse, and I know what your answer is going to be. It's going to be more violence. Shocking, I know. We need to do this to them, and we need to ban them, and we need to isolate them, and maybe put things on them, etc. But if you're a thinking person, and it's obvious that what we need to do is target the people who are actually committing the violence. Now, if you say, hey, let's go a little broader to the people who hold ideology, whether they're Nazis or Muslim radicals. Okay, that's an interesting conversation. So in that, I believe we have to defeat their ideologies. I agree with that. Now, if you say the ideology is right wing, I disagree with you. Okay, it's not all right wingers who did that violence in Charlottesville. If you say it's radical right wingers like the Nazis, the white nationalists, I agree with you. If you say it's all Muslims, I disagree with you. If you say it's radical Muslims, fundamentalist Muslims, I agree with you. Of course, and the specific people who did it should be held to account and brought to justice. So when you talk about those ideologies, how do you defeat the fundamentalist ideologies? Well, that's where we have to have a battle of ideas. And it sucks, but it's going to take a long, long time. There are no easy answers. If you just go and bomb, all it does is create more violence, more anger, and it actually helps them recruit. So you didn't do it. Imagine if we said, okay, a lot of these Nazis that showed up in Virginia were from Ohio, let's go bomb Ohio. And who would be stupid enough to say something like that? That's insanity, right? So when you say, okay, well, I don't know, I think this guy might have come from Morocco or eventually Syria or Iraq is responsible, let's go bomb them. That is equally stupid. Now, if you have a group of terrorists that you know are in a compound, that's a different question. Then you've actually targeted the people who did it. So, but how do you defeat an ideology? That isn't easy. You can't just bomb an ideology away. And by the way, you can't ban an ideology away. That's why I'm an enormous believer of freedom of speech here in America. And I believe that those Nazis, as horrific as they are, and the Klan, as horrific as they are, should be allowed to speak, should be allowed to rally, should be allowed to get together. And look, when they do, there was an alt-right protest in Seattle today, 7 people showed up. Just let them do their goofy stuff. So yes, we have to allow people to speak. Now, when it comes to Muslim radicals, here in America, it isn't much of an issue. There's almost no Muslim radicals, and it's not like they're holding rallies, and it's not like there's a debate around that issue. I know every once in a while people in Oklahoma go, oh my gosh, Sharia law is coming, let's ban it. Which Sharia law, right? It's just, again, these are ridiculous, you know, just lashing out at things that don't exist, okay? Now, again, the terrorists do exist. Should we, another easy part of this is, should we have great policing to find those guys? Of course, we should devote our resources to doing police work, real work, to find out the people who might actually do this. And by the way, credit to the FBI, they foil a lot of plots here inside the United States, both from Muslim radicals and right-wing extremists. So, and obviously we hope and want to assist in every way in Europe to do that as well. Now, in terms of defeating the ideology, banning it doesn't work, bombing it doesn't work. And by the way, if you're in the school of, oh, let's bomb it, it'll work. What do you think we've been doing the last 15 years? I mean, we invaded Iraq, bombed the hell out of it. How'd that turn out? Turns out Al-Qaeda turned into ISIS, got worse. We've been bombing ISIS and Syria for years now. Has it stopped any of this? It hasn't. So your ideology is not only immoral in bombing sometimes random or innocent or civilian people, it's also counterproductive and ineffective. So now, finally, to my idea on how to defeat that ideology. You have to make our side more attractive and their side less attractive. So I know that's a simple start, and the difficulty is in the execution. So they aren't correct. They aren't correct. And they're not, and they do this stuff because they're losers. So you saw the guys, you know, marching in Charlottesville. Were there any CEOs in the bunch? Were there any celebrities? Were there any incredibly successful doctors? I didn't see any. No, it's usually guys who are really angry because things aren't working for them, and they don't want to blame themselves. They want to look for excuses, so they lash out at other people. Same with radical Muslims. They're losing. Do they control Syria? No. And even and that is their ideal scenario, where it's war torn and fundamentalism is more likely to take root. Are they going to regain Spain? Of course not. Are they going to be able to effectively attack America? Of course not. They're losing. They're desperate and losing, and that's why they do these things. But if we could find a way to defeat the core of their ideologies, and I think that it is, you know, we're on the winning side. It shouldn't be that difficult to prove to people that Nazis who think white people are superior and the Jews and the blacks and the Muslims and everyone else is inferior, that's not an idea that's going to win in the long run. You isolate them. And by the way, in that case, what do? You show them, hey, I know you're angry, okay, but you think the Jews control the world, or the Mexican immigrant who just crossed the border somehow has all the power? No, that's insane. Put out the truth. Whether it goes to them is a different question. And you might not be able to, you're not going to convert the guys who are already Nazis. You're not going to convert the guys who are already ISIS. I'm not naive that he's about to do a terrorist attack. What, are you going to hug him? No, you're going to arrest them. You're going to bring him to justice. We're talking about long term. Do more people go to that side or less people go to that side? So the real problems in America aren't done by the powerless, they're done by the powerful. So I can show you how the system got corrupted. I can show you how the money in politics created the great inequality that we have now that drives that rage and anger in the first place. So show the reality of what's happening. In the case of Muslims, these radical Muslims have been convinced that they could win through violence. That is insane. But we don't help it by saying, okay, our answer is also violence. So look, part of it is the religions aren't true. They aren't true. Now, that doesn't mean that a great nun who cares to do the right thing and feed the poor and the hungry is a bad person. Doesn't mean Martin Luther King was a bad person. It doesn't mean a good Muslim who wants to help the poor and the needy just as much, and it's a huge part of the Quran, is a bad person. It doesn't mean random aunts, uncles, and grandparents are bad people, whether they're Christian, Jews, or Muslims. But the religions are wrong. They're wrong. They're inaccurate. They're not true. Jesus didn't walk on water. Muhammad didn't talk to God on a mountain. I mean, you're telling me Muhammad talked to God on a mountain, and God happened to say, hey, Muhammad, why don't you just take all the advantages for yourself? Take all the women, take all the land, take all the power. Boy, that's awfully convenient. Mormonism isn't correct. He didn't have magic goggles and read magic tablets. There was no virginal birth. Moses was never in Egypt. He never split the Red Sea. It never rained frogs. So you have to say that. Now, that doesn't mean that, I'm going to repeat it for the 18th time, that innocent Christians who earnestly believe those things are bad people, or that they're in any way connected to radical Christians, or that innocent Muslims are connected to radical Muslims. But if you start to believe in fairy tales, then someone can tell you a different kind of fairy tale, and you're a little bit more likely to believe it. So yes, we do have to go and tell people the religions aren't true. And I know that makes people incredibly uncomfortable, but that is the case. So once you can, I mean, look at the prosperity preachers here in America. They convince people that they need their, and this is literal, their 13th private jet. Because if you give money to them, then Jesus will favor you. Now, how in the world could anybody believe that insanity? Now, that doesn't kill anybody, but it's still insanity. How can you possibly believe it? Because once you've let go of reason and you said, I'm just going to turn myself over to blind faith. Oh, well, then if you tell me God wants you to have a private jet or Donald Trump to win or George W. Bush to win, then I'm going to believe you. If you tell me that God, Allah wants Erdogan to win or ISIS to win, I'm going to believe you. No, we got to get back to rationality and reason. So don't lash out and do something stupid and blame all people in any category or ethnicity or even a religion for the problems. Because it isn't Muslims, it's radical Islam. So yes, if you're a Muslim and you love it and you believe it, then you should fight against the radicals within your religion. And again, if you're a Christian, you should fight against the radicals in your religion that believe in end times and think that we should have one giant holocaust at the end where 7 billion people die, but you get vacuumed into the sky and you want your presidents to effectuate that policy that gets us there. You're also insane, and the moderate Christians also need to fight against you. But once we get past the radicals, the other problem is that the basis of all the religions are inaccurate. It's just not true. So you want to hate me for that? I understand, but go read it. I mean, and most of the people who believe in Christianity or Islam have never even read the texts. If you read those texts, they are ridiculous, preposterous. No human in their right mind could read those things and go, yes, well, obviously you'd have to sprinkle the goat blood all over the temple or the mosque or whatever to make sure that the Yahweh, the sky god, favors you. We have to stop believing in fairy tales, especially violent, dangerous ones. And that is going to take a long time, but we got to get on that road now so that we don't have people taking benign fairy tales and turning them into dangerous fairy tales, no matter what the religion is. And one last time, if you think your idea of it, of the way to combat this is, oh, no, I know. It's okay, your sky god is wrong, but my sky god is awesome. And of course, Allah didn't talk to Muhammad on a mountain, but obviously Jesus was born of a virgin and walked on water and rose somebody from the dead, and we drink his blood and eat his body every Sunday, obviously. And when we say everyone should die at the end in a giant Armageddon, that's awesome and humane, but they're the bad guys. You're not helping anyone. All you're doing is perpetuating the same fairy tales. And by the way, Muhammad basically ripped off the Old Testament and the New Testament. Yeah, apparently he didn't like to work very hard, so he's like, okay, Old Testament, yeah, I'll take a lot of those fairy tales. New Testament, I'll take some of those fairy tales. And then at the end, I'll write in how awesome I am and how you should follow me. So the basis of it is all based on fictions from thousands of years ago. So you want to stop attacks like this? Unfortunately, one of the things you got to do is to end the fairy tales. Okay, now, speaking of fairy tales, let's go to Trump's reaction. Okay, so we have this tragedy in Barcelona that happens today, 13 killed, 100 injured. Guy runs over a lot of people in the middle of the square. It's just horrific to look at. So Trump sends a tweet right away. This one's first one's fine. He says, "The United States condemns the terror attack in Barcelona, Spain, and will do whatever is necessary to help. Be tough and strong. We love you." Good. Okay. Almost presidential. Rock. Fantastic. Okay. Please leave it there. Please leave it there. Of course, he's not going to. So first, let me remind you what he said about Charlottesville, about how he likes to gather facts first. Watch.
Here's the thing. When I make a statement, I like to be correct. I want the facts. This event just happened. In fact, a lot of the event didn't even happen yet as we were speaking. This event just happened. Before I make a statement, I need the facts. So I don't want to rush into a statement. So making the statement when I made it was excellent.
So that was in a press conference on Tuesday as to why he took two whole days to finally say, hey, it was the KKK and they're bad guys, which on that same press conference he then backtracked from and said that there's very fine people on the KKK Nazi side. Okay, so he likes to take his time to figure out the facts. You're not going to be surprised to find out that only a little bit after the Barcelona attacks, he sent a second tweet before the authorities had called it terrorism or had figured out who done it. In fact, to this moment, they don't know who did it yet. He says, study what General Pershing of the United States did to terrorists when caught. There was no more radical Islamic terror for 35 years. So after the tweet, hours later, Spanish authorities said it is likely to be terrorism. Look, we're not naive here. It looks like terrorism. We all get it. We all, the minute we saw it, we thought it was likely to be terrorism. But I thought you liked to collect facts for days and days before you spoke. Even before the authorities in Spain said anything, he said radical Islamic terror. Well, what happened? I thought you were on a fact-finding mission. By the way, if you say, come on, Cenk, it's super obvious that it's an Islamic terror attack, because it's the same MO that they used all over Europe. And ISIS claimed responsibility, he didn't know that at the time. And they said they'd be doing an attack in Spain. That's totally fair. But it was also totally fair to say on Saturday that it was the Klan and the Nazis and the white nationalists who had done the violence in Charlottesville. You didn't need 2 days of fact gathering to figure that out. We already knew it at the time. So use the same standard. Now, secondarily, what the hell is he talking about with General Pershing? So this is a story he told on the campaign trail before. This is from, and then he repeated it again later as well. But this is from February of 2016. Listen to Trump.
You know, I read a story. It's a terrible story, but I'll tell you. Should I tell you or should I not? General Pershing, did you ever hear? Rough guy, rough guy. And they had a terrorism problem. And they were having a tremendous problem with terrorism. And by the way, this is something you can read in the history books. Not a lot of history books because I don't like teaching this. And General Pershing was a rough guy. And he sits on his horse and he's very astute, like a ramrod, right? And he caught 50 terrorists who did tremendous damage and killed many people. And he took the 50 terrorists and he took 50 men and he dipped 50 bullets in pig's blood. You heard that, right? He took 50 bullets and he dipped them in pig's blood. And he had his men load his rifles and he lined up the 50 people and they shot 49 of those people. And the 50th person, he said, you go back to your people and you tell them what happened. And for 25 years, there wasn't a problem, okay? 25 years, there wasn't a problem.
Do I even have to bother telling you that story isn't true? All right, let's go to Snopes. That's the website that debunks myths. They said, we haven't yet found any references to this alleged incident in Pershing biographies. However, nor does it match the way Pershing is generally recorded as having dealt with the Moros in 1911. Of course. And if you noticed in that story, it was 25 years. In the tweet, it was 35 years. And it was these Muslim terrorists. In reality, it was a war in the Philippines. I don't know if we had even the same conception of terrorism, let alone the word terrorism back then. And yes, in the Philippines, we did monstrous things. And there are stories actually of other soldiers that buried some Filipinos with pigs. So this is actually among the false things that he said. Like, wow, that's, since someone did it in the Philippines, that's almost barely not a lie for Trump. For anyone else, it's a wild, outrageous lie about Pershing that isn't true. For him, you're like, whoa, there was one person who actually did do that. Or allegedly, there was some stories of soldiers that had done that in the Philippines. So, but look, the much more important thing is, does he like to gather facts before he makes announcements? Or could it be that he picks and chooses based on who he likes and doesn't like? So, you remember there was that attack on a mosque in Minneapolis earlier this month. You know, he still hasn't condemned it. One of his top advisors, Sebastian Gorka, was on TV earlier this month saying, you never know, it could have been a fake attack. So when a mosque is attacked, it takes, and that's inside the United States, it takes months for him to respond. He's still gathering facts on that one. You know that the Quebec attack, 6 people killed, 19 injured, another attack on a mosque by a right winger, still hasn't tweeted about it. At the time, he was like, well, I mean, he made a call to the prime minister. And I mean, tweet about it or talk about it publicly, I need to gather facts. That was 6 months ago. So when it's a right winger doing an attack, I got to gather facts. I'm a guy who likes facts. I got to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. Because he doesn't want to condemn them. When he thinks it's a radical Muslim that did the attack, even before the authorities tell you who it is, it's them, it's them, it's them. Facts, I don't need no stupid facts. It's the Muslims. Okay. Now the reality is, in this case, it is very likely a Muslim radical. And the authorities say that it's a terrorist attack. But it's also true that it was outrageous, horrific right-wingers who did it in Charlottesville. And we knew it on Saturday. You didn't need to wait till Monday, let alone the fact that you retracted it on Tuesday. And today, you're still tripling down on how both sides do it. You know what happened in Minneapolis. You know what happened in Quebec. If you had the same reaction to all of them, and you called out the Klan, the Nazis, and ISIS, and radical Muslims, the same, great. That's what you're supposed to do as president. But when you say, oh, the Muslims are bad, but all my right-wingers who kill people, oh golly gee, I'm still gathering facts about them. We know exactly what you're up to. It's horrific, he's disgusting. So if you're a Trump supporter, you know he's not gathering facts. Just say it. Say it, we don't like Muslims, we're bigots, okay? And I don't like the Muslim radical who did Barcelona. No one does, those people are monsters. That's super easy to say. Leave it there. No, you're not gonna leave it there, right? No, all Muslims, most Muslims, majority of Muslims. You know it, and Trump knows it, that's where you're going with it. So just say it, okay? Now, when it's a right winger who does it, we're not as stupid as you are. We're not as stupid as Donald Trump is. We say it was those guys who did it. It was Fields in particular, and the guys at the rally who were the alt-right, the white nationalists. That doesn't mean every right winger in the country. That doesn't mean 50% of the country are monsters or killers or believe in a radical ideology. They believe in an ideology that I wholeheartedly disagree with, whether it's right-wing ideology or Muslim ideology. I don't agree with either one of those. But the real problem is the radicals. Decent, smart people say, yes, it is the radicals and the fundamentalists that are the problem, and it is their fundamentalism and their extremism that's the problem. Indecent bigots like Donald Trump go, no, I don't like those radicals, and I'll blame the entirety of that entire ethnic group or religion for it, but I'll ignore that the core of the problem is actually extremism, fundamentalism. And if my side, right wingers, have radicals within their ranks, I won't call them out. Or it'll take me days and days to call them out, or months and months to call them out. That's what a bigot does, Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. Gabby Morita's a longtime viewer of the show, and I often read her tweets. She's in Spain, and sorry, I'm not going to get the pronunciations of any of this stuff right, but she tweeted in, Galicia and Catalunya may have sibling rivalry, but tonight it feels like my sister has been silenced. Aquesta nit soc Barcelona. Sorry about the pronunciation, but Gabby, we all feel Spain's pain tonight, and take care and be well. And they're going to a vigil tonight that's a part of a memorial. Muir wrote in, but there was violence on both sides, right? I mean, so think about that. I mean, who would be monstrous enough today to say, well, you know, the ISIS guy who drove the van and the people who got run over. I mean, problems on both sides, terrific people on both sides and bad people on both sides. Who could possibly say that about those poor people run over in Barcelona? All right, and finally, I Am Sock says, you know what we should fight hate with? More hate. That's been working forever, hasn't it? Thank God we have a hateful POTUS. It's not one of my favorite sayings, like, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting the different result. That's actually not really the definition of insanity. But it is a pretty stupid thing to do. And we've run on hate for a long time, and it's never worked, and it's never dissuaded us anyway. You know what worked? You know what? Can anybody remember? I mean, I should have told you this in the context of the Barcelona story. I should tell you every day. You know what worked in turning our enemies into our allies? Kindness. I know. Oh, you liberals with your rainbows and ponies and all that stuff. No, it's called the Marshall Plan. We took Germany, and Japan, who we were in the worst war of our lives with, the Nazis and the people who did Pearl Harbor. Well, is there anything worse than ISIS? Yes, Nazis, the real ones that we fought back in World War II. And we turned those two countries into our top allies. What? By further bombing them after they were defeated? No, by rebuilding them, by helping them. Now, if you suggested that, they say, oh, what a stupid level. No, it's the only thing that's ever worked. Should read some goddamn history, right-wingers. Okay. Let's go to, speaking of goddamn right-wingers, let's go to more Trump. So the fallout continues from Charlottesville, Senator Lindsey Graham condemning Donald Trump's equivocation on the matter. He wrote, through his statements yesterday, President Trump took a step backward by again suggesting there's moral equivalency between the white supremacist neo-Nazis and KKK members who attended the Charlottesville rally and people like Ms. Heyer, who of course was the person who was killed. I, along with many others, do not endorse this moral equivalency. So, of course, that sends Trump into a rage, or he's going to triple down and dig this hole even deeper. He tweets, publicity-seeking Lindsey Graham falsely stated that I said there's moral equivalency between the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists, and people like Ms. Heyer. Such a disgusting lie. He just can't forget his election trouncing. The people of South Carolina will remember. Oh, so that's classy. You're threatening his seat in the midst of this, responding to this national crisis. And you're talking about how he lost in the campaign. Well, okay. I'm not going to go back to all the times where I can show you tapes of him saying, both sides do it. And there's very fine people on both sides, and that the left was very, very violent. Because I don't have to. He did the same moral equivalency today. So he first says, I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. Okay, then he goes on to say this. You had a group on one side and the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious and horrible. It was a horrible thing to watch. There is another side. There was a group on this side. You can call them the left. You have just called them the left that came violently attacking the other group. You can say what you want. That's the way it is. You just put them on the same moral plane. You just did it. You did it again for the third time. That was a moral equivalency. Oh, both sides were doing the violence. Wait, who got killed? Who ran over other people? No, that was the alt-right. Apparently your side, because you keep defending them. 3-4 days later, you're still defending. No, now it's 5 days later. You're still defending them. And you're still saying, well, I mean, maybe they had it coming. Maybe the people who got run over and murdered had it coming. Very violent. Terrible, horrible things on the left side. So the guys who are Nazis and the guys who were protesting against Nazis, well, both of them are violent. They're both at fault. So just let's be clear about it. Yes, you are definitely putting them on the same plane. You're doing moral equivalency. That's because you're a monster. And you think those guys who went and chanted, the Jews will not replace us, they went and found a synagogue in Charlottesville, and they started walking around with their guns, chanting Sieg Heil. There's some fine people on that side, Trump says. There's some fine people on that side. So were the people inside the synagogue who were scared for their lives in America in 2017? Did they also have it coming? This guy's disgusting. So he can't stop. He can't stop himself. What did I tell you? I told you he can't stop himself. He's going to keep on digging and digging and digging because that's who he is. He's stubborn. He's a moron. And yes, he is a white nationalist. I'm not saying it. He's the one constantly defending them. Okay, he says, sad to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues and monuments. You can't change history, but you can learn from it. Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, who's next? Washington, Jefferson? So foolish. Also, the beauty that is being taken out of our cities, towns, and parks will be greatly missed and never able to comparably replaced. So let's just first start with the difference between Washington, Jefferson, and Stonewall Jackson, and General Lee. One side were Americans. They started America, Washington and Jefferson. Were they perfect? Of course not. Do we study them in their full context? Yes. Any smart person would. But they started America and built the foundation for a country that is amazing. And yes, that union needs to be perfected, but they wrote a beautiful constitution. And one of the greatest documents ever, and one of the reasons is one of the greatest documents is said, you should change this document from time to time and you should make it better, and we have. The other guys betrayed the country that Washington and Jefferson started and were traitors and murdered Americans in the middle of a civil war. Hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their lives because those traitors started a war just so they could own other human beings. If you can't understand that distinction, you're not an American. You're of course also not very bright. And don't dare ever lead in one of your rallies a USA, USA chant as you celebrate the beautiful statues of the traitors who betrayed this country. We lost more people in that war than any other war because of those traitors that you now call beautiful. And those beautiful statues were not put up right after the Civil War. They were put up during the Jim Crow era, and they had a very specific purpose. It was to intimidate African Americans living in the South. Over 700 of them were put up. Over 700 of them are still up. And they were put up in places like where slave auctions used to happen. That was not an accident. They put it up next to the slave auction to remind people that there were slave auctions. And those were the men who protected the idea of slave auctions. They are not beautiful. They are disgusting, just like you, Donald Trump. The other places they put them up is in the big town circles and squares to say, we run this place. And then they put them up next to government buildings and courthouses to say, you'll never get your rights, African Americans. So are they right in tearing them down? Goddamn right they are. You're gonna walk in the shadow of those monsters? The ones who took your freedom, your lives, let alone everything else? No, 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 no. And he calls them beautiful. The jury's in, man. There's no questioning anymore what Donald Trump is. He is, and let me be incredibly clear here, racist. He is a clear racist. And if you don't like it, that's a sad day for you, but that's a fact. You don't go support these monsters. He said, if you look, there were people protesting very quietly the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. They were holding torches, imitating a Klan rally, chanting blood and soil, which is a Nazi chant. They also chanted, Jews will not replace us. And the other thing they were not quiet about is when they murdered Heather Heyer and ran over 19 other people. You want to make excuse for him, go ahead. But the jury's in and the facts are in. He's a clear racist. And anyone who supports that racist, knowing who he is, you know what you are too. And if you want to cry about it, you want to be a snowflake, you want to get triggered by the facts, go cry and cry and cry. But the reality is the Confederacy were traitors. They wanted slavery. They believed in white supremacy. And yes, you moron, if you believe in white supremacy, that is the definition of racism. I saw an idiot Klansman the other day on a video going, oh yeah, white people are superior, right? I know, that's why you're so successful, right? you freaking loser. It's just nothing but absolute trash sitting there saying how he's superior to other people, because he isn't, because he's a loser. And he desperately, desperately needs someone to be lower than him. And he can't do it based on a meritocracy. So he's going to say, I don't know, I'm going to pick a random thing, whether it's religion or race, and put that guy underneath me. And he said, why people are superior? And then they say, well, isn't that racist? He goes, no, that's not racism. No, that's the definition of racism. And you support the Confederacy, you support those men, those statues, you support those traitors, you support guys who imitated a Klan rally, you support Nazis who ran over people and chanted Jews will not replace us. Yes, you are a racist and a bigot. I hope that was clear enough. God, they'll cry over that. God, they're the, all right, and enough with the stupid fucking right wingers. Okay, and again, it's not all right wingers, it's these idiot alt-right white nationalists. And credit to the Republicans like Lindsey Graham who are standing up and fighting back against it. Okay, now let's go to give you a sense of where Donald Trump gets his talking points. So I often criticize CNN, but I do segment by segment when I think it's merited. And we point out the facts for you guys and what they get wrong, and from time to time what they get right. Well, today I want to give them credit because I think they did a very interesting interview and then an interesting segment afterwards to give you a sense of where Donald Trump is getting their talking points. It's a very good job by the reporter here. He went and interviewed Jared Taylor. Jared Taylor is what he calls himself, a white advocate. And he explained in the interview that he is an advocate for white people, and you know, and that whites need to be defended, and you know the whole drill, right? And he's got a whole group that he started and founded based on that. And he interviewed him a couple hours before Donald Trump did his insane press conference at Trump Tower on the same day. But the interview did not go live, so Donald Trump did not know about it. Now, they then put the interviews together to give you a sense of where Trump might have gotten his talking points. But he didn't see Jared Taylor. They believe the same things. They get their talking points from the same places. So look at how similar they are right now.
I interviewed Jared Taylor Tuesday afternoon, 2 hours before President Trump's news conference in New York. The answer's so similar, it's almost as if the president was listening in. 2 p.m.
And there would have been no violence whatsoever if there had not been counter-protesters showing up with baseball bats and helmets and masks.
Mr. Trump, 2 hours later.
Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, that they came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do.
2 p.m.
If those folks hadn't showed up, there would have been no violence. I believe they are much more hate motivated than the people who wanted to gather and talk about preserving the Lee statue and preserving a white majority.
Many different
4 p.m.
But not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee.
Then this.
When are we going to rename the capital city, Washington, D.C.? He was a slave owner. When are we going to write out of history the first 7 of 9 presidents who owned slaves? Are they all going to come down?
Well, no, George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down, excuse me, are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas?
If it talks like a white supremacist, it's likely a white supremacist. Same ideas, same ideology, same talking points. At least we now know where Donald Trump stands. I'm sure he must be so proud to stand with those white supremacist racists. That's who Donald Trump is. We'll be right back. All right, apparently we're back, Young Turks. Bella writes in, I live in Barcelona. The city is shocked but resilient. The tweet Jank read said, tonight we're all from Barcelona. Thank you all. Barcelona, by the way, is a gorgeous, gorgeous city. In fact, we had a story in the rundown we didn't get to earlier in the week about how Barcelona is so beautiful that it is actually overrun by tourism, and the locals are starting to get frustrated because there's so many people coming to see their beautiful city. And then this happens. Ugh, man. Anyway, George T. writes in, Cenk, you're absolutely 100% correct. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, isn't insanity, it's stupidity. Well, that is pretty simple, yes. Let's go to another story of about Trump, unfortunately, regarding him doubling and tripling down on in Charlottesville. Okay. Politico has an interesting story about insiders from the White House explaining how Donald Trump works. It is related to a number of issues he deals with, but in this particular case, they are talking about Charlottesville, Virginia, and his reaction to give you a sense of why he reacted in the way that he did. And now he has tripled down and basically shown moral equivalency between the people who committed the violence in Charlottesville and who were Nazis and alt-right and white nationalists and KKK and the people that were there to protest Nazis. Okay. So they explain, President Donald Trump's decision to double down on his argument that both sides were to blame for the violent clashes at a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, was driven in part by his own anger and his disdain for being told what to do. So on Saturday, he comes out and says both sides, many sides are at fault. Then he refused to say anything more, and he refused to call out the Klan or the Nazis or the white nationalists. For two whole days, we wait, we wait, we wait. Today in Barcelona, he called it out even before the authorities concluded what had happened. So he does not like to gather facts. That is not what he does. He likes to support his alt-right base. And so then on Monday, he finally put out a statement, which he read from a teleprompter, and it was obvious that it was not genuine. He rotely read, oh yes, the KKK and the Nazis are bad. And then went away. Apparently, they advised him to do that, and it got under his skin. He didn't like that. It's like, I don't like being told what to do. I'm a white nationalist, and I don't want to denounce the white nationalist. So the next day, he called an impromptu press conference in Trump Tower, which you saw yesterday, and came out and said, no, I'm blaming both sides. So he was lying on Monday. He was reading from a teleprompter. That was his advisors who had written that for him and his lawyers. And he didn't like it. He wants to blame the people who were protesting Nazis and the Klan. He wants to blame them, and he did over and over again. He tripled down today. Politico story was written between the doubling down and the tripling down. Today, again, he drew the moral equivalency, again blamed the people who were protesting the Nazis. Okay, and by the way, were murdered. Politico continues, Trump's temper has been a constant force in this 8-month-old White House. He's made policy decisions after becoming irritated with staffers and has escalated fights in the past few weeks with everyone from the Senate Majority Leader to the volatile dictator of North Korea. So he's a child. We know almost all of this is, you're going to see his temper tantrums from this sad man child that we have as president. Now, when he rips the country apart in a place, in a situation like Charlottesville, it's disgusting and deeply hurtful to the country. But if he acts this impetuously in the case of North Korea, it's not just our morality that's on the line, it is the lives of millions of people. I hope to God that the people around him do not follow unlawful orders if he gives them, because his ego has been bruised. This guy is a danger to the entire planet. A White House advisor, one of his allies, the people that works inside the Trump White House, said, in some ways Trump would rather have people calling him racist then saying he backed down the minute he was wrong, because he's a fucking child. That's why. And by the way, he doesn't mind being called a racist because he is a racist. Okay, back to the quotes. He says, this may turn into the biggest mess of his presidency because he is stubborn and doesn't realize how bad this is getting. But that advisor works with Trump and is happy to work with Trump. So what he doesn't realize is, no, or what he doesn't want to admit is, Trump doesn't mind being a racist. You're thinking like, oh, it's getting really bad. It's getting really bad. Everybody thinks we're a racist. But that's your perspective, and I guess slight, you know, upside for this Trump advisor. But to him, he's like, oh, we're getting really racist. And remember, this is the guy who challenged Barack Obama's birth certificate for 5 years. He was born in Hawaii. No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. He looks foreign to me. Okay, you think some idiots think that's not racist. That's, oh, he said, oh, really? I'd like to see his college transcript from Columbia. How can this black guy get good grades? You want to say that's not racist? Okay. The Central Park Five. He put out a full page ad about how they should be executed. Oh, he likes to gather the facts. It turns out they didn't do it. Turns out they didn't rape that white woman. And they were held in jail for all those years. Now they have been proven to be innocent. Okay, you say, oh, well, he got it wrong. And in that moment of anger, he spent all that money in a full page ad attacking those kids. After they were proven innocent, he said, I don't care. I still think they should be in jail. But they're innocent. They served decades in prison. Someone else did it. We know who did it now. I don't care. Well, why doesn't he care? Because it isn't about the crime. It's that they're black. And he hated them for being black because he's a fucking racist. Okay, so now back to Politico. For Trump, anger serves as a way to manage staff, expresses displeasure, or simply as an outlet that soothes him. Because he's also a fucking child. Oh, that made me feel better. I got to yell at somebody. This moron of morons is our president. Negative television coverage and lawyers earned particular ire from him. I don't like to follow the laws. Why are you making me follow the laws? There's a specific example about that in a second. I don't like it when they criticize me. Grow up. You're the president. Of course they're going to criticize you. But I don't like it. Got to get him out of office, you guys. Now there's a lot of people in the country who understand how dangerous he is and what a monster he is. But even those people, you're not getting it. The lives of millions of people are on the line. This man-child is going to make a decision about whether to launch nukes or not in North Korea. We got to get him out. We got to get him out. White House officials and informal advisors say the triggers for his temper are if he thinks someone is lying to him, if he's caught by surprise. What is that? What do you mean caught by surprise? When somebody says boo to him, okay, if someone criticizes him, of course, oh my God, if someone criticizes him. Or if someone stops him from trying to do something or seeks to control him. But I don't want to eat the broccoli. Why are you making me eat the broccoli? I'm really angry. It's fun and games until there's a million people dead in Seoul, South Korea. Okay, the president did not want to be told what to do and seemed in high spirits on Tuesday evening. This is after the insane press conference. Even as headlines streamed out about his seeming overtures to hate groups, according to one White House advisor who spoke to him. After that train wreck of a press conference where he doubled down on calling the people who were murdered the same as the people who did the murdering, he walked out in high spirits, thought, I nailed it. I did such a great job of defending white nationalists. The transgender ban. So why did he do that? You know that his own Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, said, no, please don't do it. We haven't studied it. We haven't gone through the right process. There's a process for how you make decisions in the government. The Coast Guard said they wouldn't enforce it. It was so illegal. All of his lawyers said, we have to follow a process. We have to do the rule of law. Remember how you said you were for law and order? So he got mad at them and he tweeted. So listen to this. The president had grown tired of White House lawyers telling him what he could and could not do on the ban and numerous other issues such as labor regulations, said one informal White House advisor. While multiple factors were in play with a transgender ban, Trump has grown increasingly frustrated by the lawyers' calls for further study and caution. So he took it upon himself to tweet out the news of the ban, partly as a reminder to the lawyers who's in charge, the advisor said. In other words, I don't care about the law. I've never cared about the law. You tell me that's the law? That's like your opinion, man. If I'm president, I get to do whatever I want. That's not how it works. You're not a dictator, you're not a king. Here in America, checks and balances matter, process matters, most importantly, the rule of law matters. By the way, if you didn't ever get the update on that, he tweets, oh, I'm banning all the transgender people. It's gonna cost so much. We did a story recently about actually it costs 100 times more to try to recruit new people to replace them. But more importantly, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs said, we're not doing it. It has not gone through the regular process. If he actually orders it and not sends it to me in a tweet and it goes through the process, then we will do it. But right now, that's not the law of the land because you have to follow the law. But he never believed in America. All those USA chants were just window dressing. He doesn't believe in our system of government. And he's too stupid and too childish to realize that he has to work with other people to get things done. God help us all if Kim Jong-un gets under his skin on the wrong day. I'm so terrified for the people of South Korea. All right, let's go to his poll results. Okay, so Donald Trump is now tripled down. To be fair, the CBS News poll was done after he only doubled down on moral equivalency between the protesters of Nazis and the Nazis themselves. And they asked people, do you approve of Trump's response to the Charlottesville attack? Only 34% approved, 55% disapproved. That's not nearly low enough. That I was really disheartened by that number. Okay, it gets better and worse. Independents are the ones that decide elections, whether we like it or not. They are more against them than the average American, so that's a good thing. 32% approved, 53% disapproved of his reaction. But look at the Republicans. 67% approved, only 22% disapproved. So maybe I gave Republican voters too much credit earlier in the week. Anna and I had a debate about it, and she said it won't move them. And I thought that it might move some of the moms in Kansas that are Republican voters, but that find him to be a bully and a tyrant, according to one focus group. But you know what? Even in that focus group, they all said that they would still vote for Trump. And here's 2/3 of Republicans going, you want to blame the people who got killed, who were there to protest against Nazis, as they were chanting, the Jews will not replace us, as they were carrying in Klan outfits and white supremacist outfits and swastikas. 2/3 of Republican voters saying, yeah, that's fine. Blame both sides, no problem. Make the Nazis and the anti-Nazis on the same moral plane. That is deeply depressing. I mean, I am in some regards a fire-breathing progressive. And apparently, I had too good an opinion of Republican voters. I guess they're much worse than I thought. Okay, have Trump policies encouraged racial unity? Overall, 12% yes. Come on. 44% say it has encouraged racial division, and 39% said not much effect. Okay, that's a perfectly fine result. I think he's clearly increased racial division, but that's the plurality, so that's okay. Among independents, he does even worse again, so that's really good news. 11% believe he's brought more racial unity, 43% say he's brought more racial division, and 40% say not much effect. Let's go to Republicans again. Here, they're having trouble saying he brought racial unity, even the Republicans. But still, 25% say brought racial unity, only 15% say racial division, so the racial unity is still a much higher number. And 56% saying not much effect. Basically going, I don't see it. He's lost most of the country. He's lost 2/3 of the independents. If there was an election today, he'd be in a world of trouble. He thinks he can pull a rabbit out of his hat again. You were running against a person who was deeply disliked, who was a symbol of the establishment and the elites people didn't like. I don't know that you're going to get that lucky again. That's up to the Democrats. But even so, these are disastrous numbers. But when you look at the Republicans and how strongly they're still holding on to him, even after his equivalency on Nazis, it is depressing state of the Republican Party in today's America. Okay, now let's go to Steve Bannon. I have a lot of news for you guys today. Okay. Steve Bannon pulled a Scaramucci. He called up Robert Kuttner at the American Prospect, that is a progressive magazine, and talked to him. He didn't say it was off the record. Now, Steve Bannon is a politically savvy guy. He's dealt with the media forever. He ran a media organization, Breitbart. He knows that if you're going to talk off the record, you have to say off the record. And he didn't. So I don't know what the hell is going on in his head. I don't know if this is him psychologically just going, forget it. He's already besieged, and Donald Trump did not enthusiastically back him the other day. There's calls for his firing. But he calls into Kuttner and then says amazing things, some of which are against Trump's wishes and some of which are against a specific people. So let me get to it. First, he ostensibly called to talk about China and North Korea because he thought Kuttner was on the same side of him when it comes to trade negotiations with China. I don't think that he understands where Kuttner stands. And even if Kuttner were to agree with him on trade issues, as he explained in the piece in the American Prospect, and we'll have a link below, you should read it. He certainly does not agree with Steve Bannon on anything else and is not his ally. So at a bare minimum, this was incredibly foolish on Steve Bannon's part. So on that issue, he says, there's no military solution to North Korea's nuclear threats. Forget it. Until somebody solves the part of the equation that shows me that 10 million people in Seoul don't die in the first 30 minutes from conventional weapons, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no military solution here. They got us. Now, that is directly contradictory of Donald Trump's rhetoric and policy. Oh boy, that'll get you in trouble. Now, on the other hand, it's one of the rare sensible things I've ever heard Steve Bannon say. It's a relief to know that he recognizes that millions of people would die in Seoul, South Korea, if we were to attack North Korea. So I hope if Donald Trump is thinking of attacking North Korea, along with the generals and everyone else in the administration, Steve Bannon says to him, hey, knucklehead, don't do it, we'll lose millions of people. I hope. He says, but that's not the important part and that's not the main issue. He says the main issue is, quote, the economic war with China is, quote, everything. So now I think that in some ways we do need to get tougher on China. On the other hand, starting an economic war with them sounds like a disastrous idea. But do these guys look like they're going to be able to be tempered and sagely figure out what the right balance is so that we get a better deal from China without starting a trade war? It certainly doesn't appear to be the case. Okay, well, now we get on to politics inside the White House. They say that you have all these enemies in the national security organizations, in the Treasury Department, among the top advisors to the president. He says on this issue about how he's going to do this ploy to start a trade war with China, he says, quote, oh, they're wetting themselves. What is with all the phallic references with Trump's advisors? Okay, that is not going to go over well, but he's about to make it worse. When they say, well, how about the people in foreign policy who don't agree with you? He says, quote, I'm changing out people at East Asian Defense. I'm getting Hawks in. I'm getting Susan Thornton, acting head of East Asian and Pacific Affairs, out at state. You have the power to do that? I thought the president does that. So you know how they sometimes mockingly call him President Bannon, which definitely gets under Trump's skin. Well, this is why they say that, because he calls up reporters like, here's who I'm going to fire and not fire at the White House and on the foreign policy team. That puts you in trouble, dog. Jesus, this was incredibly stupid. If he did it on purpose, maybe this is three-dimensional chess, because in regular chess, it looks like he's about to get, you know, he's about to get checkmated and thrown out of the office. But we'll see. Trump hasn't fired him yet. About the fights, he says, within the White House, he says, that's a fight. I fight every day here. We're still fighting. There's Treasury and National Economic Council Chair Gary Cohn and Goldman Sachs lobbying. Again, here there's a kernel of truth in what Steve Bannon is saying. Gary Cohn is from Goldman Sachs. In fact, he was the COO of Goldman Sachs. Are they lobbying to get tax cuts for Goldman Sachs? Yes. Are they lobbying to get special favors to the bankers, Goldman Sachs, and the financial industry? Yes. Is it smart to say that you are going to try to get the president's National Economic Council chair fired to a liberal reporter? No, that is not smart. That is likely to get you fired. Okay. He says, on all these issues. We've got to do this. The president's default position is to do it, but the apparatus is going crazy. Don't get me wrong. It's like every day. So continuing to talk about the fight and saying that the president is on his side. We'll see about that. He said, the Democrats, the longer they talk about identity politics, I got them. I want them to talk about racism every day. If the left is focused on race and identity and we go with economic nationalism, we can crush the Democrats. Unfortunately, there's a kernel of truth in that statement as well, which is that economic nationalism is not necessarily the correct economic policy, but it does appeal to people. Unfortunately, it has deep appeal. But the Democratic Party is still going, no, you know, Goldman Sachs is great, and we probably would have picked Gary Cohn too. And they're supporting guys like Steve Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary. It's a disastrous idea. And the reality is economic nationalism, whether it's right or wrong, can be politically popular. Unfortunately, he's right about that. And if all, now identity politics, are you kidding me? They're the guys who are, he's proudly the father of the alt-right movement. What is that? That's identity politics. But at the same time, if that's the only thing you use on the right or the left, it's not necessarily a winning strategy. Now, when it comes to the white nationalists that were down in Charlottesville, he has very surprising opinion on that, if you believe him. He says, ethno-nationalism, it's losers. It's a fringe element. I think the media plays it up too much, and we gotta help crush it. You know, help crush it more. And then he adds, these guys are a collection of clowns. Now that might be a mistake of a different order. That's Steve Bannon losing his own base. Hey Steve, if the white nationalists aren't your base, who is? If you think that you have a base, forget Trump, that you have a base of support in a country that is outside of the alt-right movement, I think you're in for a rude awakening. So apparently his real opinion is, we use these white nationalists who are clowns to get political votes. We don't really believe that. There's an upside to that. If you really believe this, he's not as racist as he appears to be. He just uses racism for his own benefits. I don't think that makes it much better. But it's also going to piss off the racists. So now you don't have many allies left. Now we go to the reaction room from inside the White House, and Axios has that. One advisor said, it's Anthony Scaramucci all over again. Indeed. Jonathan Swan at Axios explains further, the result is not good for Bannon, who's already under pressure with colleagues lined up against him and a president who agrees with him ideologically, but tells associates he thinks Bannon is a leaker. If the president didn't like you because you're leaking, oops, this was a pretty bad leak. Here is a colleague of Steve Bannon who says he's not his enemy, but he says, boy, since Steve apparently enjoys casually undermining US national security, I'll put this in terms he'll understand. This is DEFCON 1 level bad. And finally, Swan says, the peace gives Bannon's enemies ammunition at a time he's extraordinarily vulnerable. They've been saying he's a leaker, a self-promoter, President Bannon, etc. This interview plays right into their hands. So this part of the soap opera is not over yet, but Steve Bannon has apparently done grave damage to himself inside the White House. Now, I don't know if these are his real opinions or if he was in his own mind doing some sort of jujitsu move. I think he might have just jujitsu'd himself right out of the White House. And I hope to God he is, because whether he's actually racist or just wants to get racist voters on his side, doesn't make much of a difference to me. I want him out, and I want that ideology out. Look, it's the Trump White House is a disaster. It's a basket of deplorables, to borrow a term. But among those deplorables, Steve Bannon is among the worst. So can't wait for him to get fired. I don't know if he will. Him being a racist is not going to get him fired. Him trying to appeal to white nationalists is not going to get him fired. Him wanting to start a trade war with China is not going to get him fired. Him pretending to be the president and talking about how he's going to get people out and put people in, that'll get him fired. So we'll see. We'll see if Trump understands this enough. And I'm sure they put it in a folder for him. And since it's got his name on it, he's going to pay attention and see if he takes action on Bannon. Can't wait. Okay, now last two stories for you guys. I know we've gone really long here, but it is another amazing news day. Okay. The alt-right is at it again. They've got another protest. Oh my God, is it going to be masses of people holding torches, violent action, something to be really concerned about? No. It's a bunch of clowns. They went to protest a Lenin statue in Seattle. So I'm going to tell you where that statue is, and it's very relevant near the end of the story. So they go out there, and let's show you a picture. Wow, 7 whole people showed up. What did I tell you, man? If you just let them do their goofy stuff, only 7 people show up. So there was so much hype and publicity around Charlottesville that more people showed up. If you just let them gather the local clowns, it's always going to be 7 people. So that's why, God bless the people who want to stand up against those fascists in Charlottesville. But just let them speak and do their stupid little chants and don't hype it up. So let me show you how sad this protest was. Watch this. You can keep the bistro. I don't know what that was about. I assume they were chanting something else, but it sounded like who's bistro? Our bistro. Man, these guys are weird. Okay, so I don't even want to know what they were chanting. They had a sign, Lenin is Hitler. So does that mean you like him? I'm not sure where you're going with that. Okay, so Gateway Pundit, which is a conservative blog, looked at that protest and said, amazing. That was amazing. Because they live in an alternate reality, so they're like, oh no, nailed it. Man, they shook Seattle. Okay, I can't help but read you a couple of snide tweets in response. Nate writes in, damn, if that crowd gets any bigger, it might be able to fill up a Dodge van. Mike writes in, the cool thing is if you guys go out to eat later, you don't need to worry about the automatic gratuity for larger parties. Dr. Geb Sorka writes in, biggest crowd since the inauguration. And Lee writes in, this is so sad, I've seen bigger crowds in an elevator. And then my favorite from Stefan Heck. Heck, you guys are close to being outnumbered by the statue. Okay, so is this a big problem in America, Lenin statues? Well, there are over 700 Confederate monuments across America. To the best of our knowledge, there's one Lenin statue. Okay, but hey, the people of Seattle and the government of Seattle, look at what they're sending with that statue, except for this. The statue, which is up for sale for $250,000, now sits on private property in Fremont. So it's not on public land. Do you believe in private property? Boy, that would be ironic if you didn't. So there's nothing we can do about it. Some guy owns it, it's on his property, and he actually wants to sell it. In fact, let's figure out where it came from. According to the Seattle Weekly, statue had originally been erected in Czechoslovakia during the Soviet era. After communism fell in that country, an English teacher from Washington found the statue in a junkyard and had it transported to the US. We have no idea what their intent was. We don't know if it was like, hey, cool, the Soviet Union fell down and this is a symbolism of it. I found this in a junkyard. Or Lenin rocks. You have no idea which one they meant. This is not a real problem in America. The Confederate monuments were put up to intimidate African Americans during Jim Crow era. This statue was not put up in Fremont to intimidate capitalists in Seattle. This is not, but this is exactly the disproportionality that the alt-right goes through all the time. Like, oh my God, you didn't say Merry Christmas to me, you said Happy Holidays. Oh my God, I'm so aggrieved. This is the real problem in America. No, you're inventing these problems and you look like a total jackass doing it. By the way, you know what they do with this Lenin statue in Seattle? Every once in a while they dress him up. During Pride Week, this is what they do to Lenin. You think Lenin's in favor of that? Does it look like they're being very reverential to Lenin? I'm pretty sure Lenin would not have agreed to that. Okay, there is no epidemic of Lenin monuments in America, and that's why only a bunch of clowns showed up to that. So yes, in Charlottesville we had a major problem. Yes, online these guys do wreak havoc in their stupid trolling ways, but overall they are still a tiny, tiny minority in the country. Don't hype them up to what they are not. And Trump didn't win because of these guys. Yes, he is part of their base, but Trump largely won because people didn't want the establishment to win. Almost anyone else in that position who was running as a populist would have won. So don't overhype these guys and give them power they don't actually have. Okay, last one for you guys, speaking of clownish Nazis. Okay, so in Charlottesville, there was a lot of people recording things, and among them was documentary filmmaker CJ Hunt, and he caught a really interesting moment. Now, this is a guy, I don't know his name, I don't want to know his name. He had that same outfit that they, all the white nationalists had, which is the khaki pants or shorts and a white polo shirt. I guess they're doing that in reverence to their dear leader, Donald Trump. That's the outfit he wears while golfing. So this guy appears in the beginning here to be chased by counter protesters and he panics. Later he's emboldened, but first let's show you the panic, we'll also show you at the end of this video, once he's past that, how he goes back to being a tough guy.
You can't just take your costume off.
What the fuck is that?
Don't get yourself in trouble over it. Don't do it. Please don't.
You need to move back. You need to move back.
So you just came here for the fun?
For the fun.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not a real white supremacist.
Barely. It's kind of a fun idea.
Which part?
Just being able to say, like, hey man, white power. You know?
Yeah. Where's the fun part, Cop?
I mean, I was in jail.
For what?
Okay.
You're a white supremacist until people start chasing you, and then you took the uniform off. So are you going to put it back on?
Or put it? Quite honest.
Yeah, yeah.
I love to be offensive. It's fun.
It's like a cosplay.
I don't want to talk.
So, but are you going to put your white supremacist uniform back on?
I mean, that right there, I feel like is a microcosm of the whole movement. Super tough guys when they're in a crowd and when they're chanting Nazi chants. All of a sudden, if they don't have their white nationalist friends around them, that scared the shit out of me, man. Oh, I'm taking my shirt off, I'm stripping down, I'm so scared. We had the crying Nazi yesterday, we have the naked Nazi today. I don't know that he's technically a Nazi, but obviously you saw there, he said he's into white power. I think that's clear enough. I love the distinction between the white power guys and the Nazi guys. Oftentimes there isn't one, but sometimes the white power guys are like, no, we hate the blacks, the Muslims, the Latinos, women, but we don't necessarily hate the Jews. Wow, are you not merciful? I didn't know there was such an important distinction. Okay, my bad. Anyway, so he's a white power guy, but the minute that he doesn't have his pack around him, doesn't seem very powerful. Then he seems kind of scared. And then when they leave, he's back to, oh yeah, white power. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Are you gonna put the shirt back on? Not yet though. And why does he do it? That's fun to intimidate people and harass people and to say white power. Ooh, that makes me feel good. All right, at least you own it. You know why you're doing it. So yeah, it is sometimes because they get off on trolling. That doesn't make it any better. That means you're so sad that you have to try to hurt other people to try to get feel better about yourself. Look, if that's what you get off on, that's what you get off on. But I would hope that you'd find something that's a little bit more productive. And that could actually make you happier. You know, it reminds me of Martin Luther King when he said, we didn't go to the South just to liberate African Americans. We went to liberate white people, not all of them, of course, but the racists in the South, he said, from the hatred in their heart. Because that hatred in their heart doesn't help them either. You think that guy's happy overall? No, that's the worst kind of bitter happiness you'll ever see. Oh, I caused pain in someone else. Why don't you cause joy in your own life? Anyway, yes.
To confuse badassness with violent people. You know, he's like, I'm not violent. The guy yesterday, I'm not a violent person. Find me some film of me being violent, which is everywhere. But they're afraid of everything. They're afraid of their own shadows, and they're definitely afraid of other people that they never took the time to even talk to. So once they're afraid of someone, then that's when they start pulling out their violence. So then if they have his pack, they're like, oh, well, I have my gun, which is their safety mechanism, to anything that approaches them. Oh, let me start shooting because I'm afraid. So that's why they think there's this badass nature I have to being a murderer and a violent person, but really you're just scared. That's where all this comes from. You wouldn't be killing people if you weren't afraid of everyone.
No, no, you're 100% right. Their number one driving emotion, and they love to say, oh, liberals are emotional. No, 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 you guys are, you've based your entire ideology around one emotion, fear. The Muslims are gonna institute Sharia law, the Muslims are coming. Oh my God, the Mexicans, they're crossing the border, the Mexicans are coming. Oh my God, the gays, oh wait, what if it's a choice and I have to have sex with them? Oh my God, I'm so scared of myself, I'm so scared of everyone, I'll take my shirt off. The guy crying like a, you know what he was crying like yesterday. And then, but let's look at the deep breathing of this guy for a second.
What's up? I'm not really white power, man, I just came here for the fun, fuck.
Nah.
I'm sorry.
You can't just take your costume off.
What the fuck is that?
Move back now.
Fear, man, they're driven by fear. I'm gonna end on a fun little thing here. White nationalist Matt Parrott, also part of these protests, got himself all worked up and then this happened.
And you lost! You staged a bomb fight! And lost!
Every right to be here. The police department did absolutely nothing to enforce a legal permit.
Just when you thought a white supremacist couldn't be fun, one more. That's the movement right there. Bunch of clowns. All right, we'll be right back.